And welcome to this exclusive episode here on Click Africa. I'm Josie Mahachi, and today I'm excited to be speaking to the founder and chairman of the Gift of the Givers Foundation here in South Africa, Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. How are you, sir?
Fine, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for granting Click Africa this opportunity to speak to you. I understand you're a busy man.
It's a pleasure. Anything for Africa and its message that we want all Africans to hear about and to know about.
Tell me, who is Imtiaz Suleiman?
Well, I'm a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. I regard myself as a very ordinary person. I met a spiritual teacher who said that whatever you do in life is done through you and not by you. So I regard myself as a person committed to the service of a creator, you know, and allow my energy to flow through me to serve people. Mm-hmm. I like to say I'm just that and nobody else.
Wow. What really came through your mind when you started this foundation?
Actually, again, it's not I started it. Mm-hmm. I was in Istanbul in Turkey in 1991, okay, where I met the spiritual teacher who said, you know what, my soul looks like I'm a person that likes to help somebody. The following year in 92, I met him again, and he told me, he didn't ask me, he instructed me. He said, I'm not asking you, I am telling you to form an organization. The name will be Gift of the Givers.
Wow.
You will benefit all of mankind unconditionally, of all races, of all religions, of all colors, of all classes, of all political affiliations, and of all geographical areas. You will not discriminate between different religions. You will help unconditionally, and you will help with love, with compassion, yeah, with kindness, with dignity. Don't expect to get a thank you, and don't expect anything in return.
Wow.
Expect, in fact, to get a kick up your back. If you don't get that, regard it as a bonus. And he said, now go home to South Africa, focus on Africa, because that continent needs you the most. And remember that this is the mission for you for the rest of your life.
Wow.
And that's how it started. So it's not something I started, I was instructed.
So did you have capital at that moment?
No. Mm. I mean, I don't know how serious the gentleman was. You know, I thought he was just talking about something that will happen once in a while. I was a medical doctor, 6 years in practice, in my own private practice, in Pietermaritzburg, you know, my hometown, where I live now. And I thought maybe a project once in a while will come. And I kept on going to Turkey. I met him 16 times. And every time he said, this thing will get big, it will get very big, it will get very big. He kept on saying that. And I still didn't know what he was talking about. Because initially we did one project, two projects a year, then maybe another project, only disasters at that stage, nothing else. And then eventually we started adding on other projects. And then after he passed on, actually 21st February 1999, tomorrow,
wow,
is exactly his 13th year, you know, that he passed on.
Oh, shame.
Right? And so when he passed on, his words were stronger than when he was alive.
So we're celebrating his life.
We're celebrating his life and his instruction.
That's great. All right. Gift of the Givers is known to be the biggest or the greatest disaster rescue mission here in Africa. Some people might not know. What is Gift of the Givers Foundation all about?
We started off as a disaster response agency. Mm-hmm. Immediately after that second meeting with the teacher on the 6th of August, 1992, we're 20 years old this year. We celebrate 20 years on the 6th of August, 1992. And at that stage, immediately after he instructed me, our first response was to the crisis in Europe, in Bosnia, the civil war. In August, we responded with 31 containers of aid. In November, we responded with another 8 containers of aid. And the project that took us to the top of the world was a containerized mobile hospital.
Wow.
which we designed and built in South Africa. Now remember, Africa is regarded as a continent that's always backward, that always holding the begging bowl and coming forward. So nobody expects anything to come from Africa. And with African technology, we built the world's first containerized mobile hospital and took it to Bosnia. And year after year, disasters started happening. Involvement in Rwanda, involvement in Sudan, in southern Sudan, in Niger, in Angola, in Mozambique, in Malawi, you know, and in Somalia. We kept on getting involved in Africa and outside Africa. But over a period of time, obviously, disasters don't happen every day. So we established ourselves, our trademark is disaster response, to the point that we are one of the best and one of the fastest in the world when it comes to that. And we proved it in Haiti, you know, responding to an African people in another part of the world.
I'd like to compliment you on that one. Yeah.
And you know, the great thing is that first time in the history of the world, an African team from anywhere in Africa pulled out somebody from the rubble alive in an earthquake in another part of the world, or in any part of the world. We made history, and in 2010, it was done in Haiti.
All right, for 20 years you've been in the industry, you've been looking into Africa. What can you say about Africa? Is it improving?
Yes, it's good to see that the new generation is much more alert, much more aware. We need a generation that believes in itself. We need to believe that we're not stupid, we're not backward, we have capacity, we have the know-how. Because if you analyze and you see, Africa's greatest export is its individuals, engineers, doctors, accountants, nurses, all those kind of people are required all over the world. So we have the intelligence. What we lack is the faith in ourselves. We need to believe in ourselves. And what I'm very excited about is that the new African media is promoting the self-reliance on African countries, you know, on themselves, which is very interesting and very beneficial for the continent itself. And even with the new voice, the new youth coming up, the new trade unions, new movements in the continent, the youth are believing we can do it. They need some support, they need belief in themselves, and we need governments to listen to the new generations coming up. Mm-hmm. And if the governments change, yes, it can be done. We don't want it to be done the way it was done in the Arab Spring. It must be done in a very peaceful way, where people embrace change in a very decent, rational manner.
Mm. We're going to be celebrating 20 years of the Gift of the Givers Foundation. What challenges would you say you faced in these 20 years?
Challenges were many. First of all, you know, because of prejudice. We come from South Africa, where of apartheid past, you polarize black against white, Indian, black, all different races. Then you polarize because of religion. And then you have the conflict sometimes between Christians and Muslims in Africa. That creates a negative picture. But in time, we've, you know, embraced all that, and people have understood that we're not a religious organization. We are a humanitarian organization that's spiritual, meaning we embrace all cultures and all religions, because the God of man is one. We call him by different names, but the God of man is essentially one. So to overcome that, to bring the races and the religion together was the first challenge, which we achieved. Then to get the new government after 94 to embrace who we are and what we're capable of, we won that over. And then to win the media over, they've seen our work. And then of course to get mass support from populations who may think, oh, is this fundamentalist, is this terrorist, is this a Muslim, you know, is this extremism, we won them over. That don't people from all races and all faiths donate to Gift of the Givers today. Yeah. Those are big challenges. But the ultimate challenge is, how do you change Africa? How do you make Africa self-sufficient? How do you make it to the point that there's no malaria killing children in Malawi and other parts of Africa? Mm. How do you prevent malnutrition and famine in Somalia and Niger and West Africa where the locusts came? That is the biggest challenge. Where the time will come where our children are not dying from hunger, from TB, from malaria, and the adults from HIV and other conditions. We need to overcome that. And we need to make Africa economically viable and active. And we need to go back to agriculture, because that's Africa's mainstay. 70% of African economy is dependent on agriculture. And we need the youth to understand, please go back to agriculture.
Mm. Wow. All right, besides disaster rescues, you also offer professional services. Can you take us through that?
There's many. Mm. After we built the hospital in containers, at that time, after 93, the new government, the ANC government, came to power in South Africa. And the first health minister in the new government was Kossana Dlamini Zuma, who was trying to get the EU chair. And with the backing of the government at that stage, they came up with the concept of the emphasis must be on primary health care. And to respond to that, we built clinics in containers, primary health care units, Again, that's a world first. The hospital was a world first. The clinics were a world first. And that became our next project. Mm-hmm. And in time, we started adding on several other projects. To educate Africa, money has to be spent on education in primary and secondary level mm-hmm. and on tertiary level. So we started supporting schools, educational projects, helping with stationery, with books, with meals, with uniforms, with labs, with libraries, with sports equipment, and we do that on an ongoing basis. And we put a lot of food into schools because lots of kids are hungry in our schools. Mm-hmm. Then we came to tertiary education. We started off in 97, just giving 20,000 rand in bursaries. Wow. This year, and in 2011, that figure reached to 6 million.
Wow.
Almost 400 to 500 students a year benefit from education and our bursaries. But what's very interesting is when a parent writes to you or a bursary recipient writes to you after 4 or 5 years, thank you very much, you may not remember me, I got a job, I'm earning this. And last week or 2 weeks ago, a lady who moved to Australia sent us 19,000 rand
wow.
to say, please contribute to somebody else. Wow. So that is the best form of empowerment, of entrepreneurship and self-sufficiency.
Mm.
And when a person can earn for himself, that's the greatest form of self-esteem.
Mm.
So that's bursaries. The other thing, and education, we also do agriculture, water projects, boreholes, ambulance services, medical support, supporting institutions, what orphans, old age people, elderly people, people who are in homes, children abuse, women abuse, physically and mentally challenged institutions, like the Adelaide Tambo School for the Physically Challenged in Soweto.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the big units we support. A hospital in Cape Town, where there are children who have been abandoned, who need rehabilitation, the Sarah Fox Hospital, we support that. Putting equipment in certain hospitals, putting medical supplies, we do that.
Oh.
Where, food parcels, feeding schemes, entrepreneurship in terms of bid making, IT technology to computer software, how we can help people market themselves and brand themselves, sports programs, and counseling services and life skills. Those are all different things that we do.
Mm.
24 different types of projects, including wheelchair distribution also, and also bring people of different faiths together and intercultural, interfaith kind of relationships.
Mm. Yeah, I understand besides the disaster rescues, you also discover the rest of Africa into giving aid, food, blankets, winter warmth, and stuff like that. What measures do you put in place to discover where exactly you're needed?
Well, we follow you guys. The media comes with the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And for example, when Niger was brought to the forefront, it was to the media to say, there's malnutrition, children are dying of hunger in Niger. The same thing happened with Somalia. And as we pick up the pictures, and we get the information, we try to assess how critical it is, who's responding, how viable it is, and we put a plan together. Thus far, in our 20-year history, we've responded to 32 different countries, including
wow.
South Africa.
Wow.
And we spent just over 600 million rand.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sure your donors are so grateful to hear you say that. And where are you getting your donors from? Is it just from Africa or also from Europe?
Our donors are predominantly South African, and they're predominantly ordinary people. We don't go to corporates. We don't phone people. We don't make proposals. We don't go door to door. We don't canvass. We just announce our projects. And people come in droves to our warehouses, to our offices. They line up in the thousands to bring money and goods to us because we build that kind of reputation. In time, yes, we haven't asked, but the last project for Somalia and one or two other projects, we've started seeing money from Australia, from Switzerland, from the UK, from America. Not big money, but yes, it's a beginning.
Sorry.
And some places of Malawi, Botswana, Swaziland, even Zimbabwe, Mauritius, money has been coming through. It's not in a big way yet, because all of Africa still don't know who we are, but everybody in South Africa knows who we are.
Hmm. I would like to take this opportunity here on Click Africa to talk about a project that you've just started. It's a big project for Africa, by Africans. I'm talking of Sibusiso. Can you tell us about that?
Sibusiso, again, remember the spiritual teacher said that things are done through you and not by you. It was in Malawi on the morning of 16th April 2004. It was a Friday morning. I had gone to look, strangely enough, at fertilizer and seeds, how we could support, smallholder farmers. And whilst I went to see that factory, I realized, by the way, because I got the smell of food in one of the sections. And I went there and said, but you guys never told me you're a food manufacturing facility. They said, that's what we do. We're one of the first companies that extruded soya. Many years ago, when the Mozambican refugees were coming into Malawi during the Renamo-Frelimo War, we got a 7-year contract from the World Food Program to produce a corn soya mix to give these people. And that was on Wednesday, Thursday. And just before that, I had read a report, you know, before I left South Africa in February 2004, saying that Africa's biggest problem is low protein, iron deficiency, folic acid deficiency, lack of zinc, and you know, these are the conditions and lack of iron that causes problems with kids. And that Friday morning, by Thursday night when I went to sleep, I said, God, we need a formula. And Friday morning, I got up with a formula in my head. And I have to say it's divinely guided, because we didn't do much nutrition in medical school. You don't do as much as you do as a dietitian. And to be honest with you, I didn't even go for all the lectures. So to be get up with a morning and with a formula that's almost perfect, it's a world first. A combination of groundnuts that's produced in Malawi, one of the best groundnuts in the world. But groundnuts have the problem of aflatoxin. But because the same company had lots of experience with groundnuts, how you pick them, how you blanch them, and how you roast them teaches you how to kill the aflatoxin. And every test we do on aflatoxin is within the accepted requirement worldwide on aflatoxin level. And then we said we need to mix it with another product, but we can't use milk because milk has lactose, and lactose in Africa causes severe problems. So we went for soya. But the problem with soya is, on its own, doesn't have a very nice taste. So we combined the groundnuts with soya, put in vanilla to give it flavoring, and then we said, let's go one stage further. Because like in Mozambique in the floods or any other disasters, you can't now take a stove and a 10 kg rice and a gallon of oil and some other product in the middle of water. How do you cook all this? So you need something that's instant to eat. So Sibo Siso became that product, where it requires no water to mix, no cooking, no heating.
Ready to eat.
No registration. Ready to eat. Sibo Siso, ready food supplement. You open the bottle and you eat. The power of it is that one teaspoon is energy dense, meaning that there's more energy and power in that one spoon than almost in a whole plate of food. And it's preservative-free. And it's got all the essential amino acids, fatty acids, calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, zinc, you know, vitamin A, D, E, and K, calcium, all the other requirements that's required for a healthy diet. And we've used it in HIV, in TB, in AIDS, in cancers, in a whole range of conditions. It's not a cure. It's a supplement. But people swear by it, you know, that it makes a big difference to those who take it.
So what measures are you putting into place to take it to the rest of Africa?
Well, again, we depended on media. Because if you market a product like that, it becomes too expensive. People try to copy the product, and you can get the product at probably less than half the price, but you get a product and you get a product. You know, we went for the world's best groundnuts from Malawi. We went for the world's best soya from South America and America. We went for a great premix from India, that a company that makes premix for the World Food Program and United Nations. We took organic sugar from Malawi, soya oil from Kenya. You know, so it's a combination of ingredients. If you add up all the transport cost and what's gone into the research, the product is very expensive, but the markup is very minimal because we need to get it to a population that cannot afford it. The irony with Sibo Siso is it's a quality product, but it's not affordable by the people who need it most. And that's why we need governments to buy in, international NGOs, foundations, trusts, to make it available to those who need it most. And we try to give out as many as we can from our own budgets. You said we must give a message to Africans. I want Africans to understand what people think about them. A few years ago, whilst I was in Malawi, I met a Malawi ambassador who was an ambassador to the United Nations many years ago. And whilst we were sitting in the airport together, he said, my friend, I'd like to thank you for helping my country because we have an office there. But then he went on to tell me something very interesting. He said, you know, many years ago, there was a conference in Europe. Myself and a few other African diplomats, not many of us at that time, went to the conference in Europe. And he said this conference went on for 3 days. And he said after 3 days, we all African delegates realized that the word Africa or an African country was not mentioned once in all 3 days.
Wow.
So he said to himself, they said, you know what, why is this Europe, America, other countries, you know, Asia were mentioned, but not Africa? He said, look, we felt shy because we were not many. But on the last night of the conference, when they had the grand dinner, we summed up a little bit of courage and we went to the convener of the conference. And we said, my dear friend, can you please explain to us why nobody in this conference discussed Africa or an African country, or even mentioned it once? He said, do you know what the man told me? He said, Africa is irrelevant.
What?
So, if you want to make Africa relevant to all Africans, you have to do it yourselves. Mm. We're not going to stand up and hold each other's hands. Nobody is going to support you. If you don't believe in yourself, don't expect anybody else to believe in you. And another story. In 2005, we went to Pakistan to respond to the earthquake. Mm-hmm. And when we go from South Africa, we take mixed teams of all races and all religions and all colors.
And these are all volunteers. That's one thing I also want you to emphasize.
Every person that works for, we have fixed paid personnel, mm-hmm. who are like robots,
yes.
who know exactly what to do. Mm. But when we go overseas, the personnel who come are all volunteers. They may be in private practice earning up to 20 or 30,000 rand a day. And they would close their practice for 10 or 12 days and come, but no money given to them. They would
just
do it
to help, give a
just
hand.
To help, and highly skilled personnel. Now, these are the kind of personnel I went with to Pakistan. When I got there, when you see the Chinese, they all look the same. When they come from one country, they come from India, they all look the same. The Europeans all look the same. But when you come from South Africa, it's very confusing because you see a white Afrikaner, a white Englishman, a black Zulu man, a black Khoza man, an Indian Hindu, an Indian Muslim. It's all very mixed up.
Yeah.
And when you go there, when we got there, this one guy came from a European organization. He said, where are you from? I said, from Africa, mm-hmm. from South Africa. He said, oh, you're from Africa? What did you come to fetch from here? Because you Africans are always looking for free things.
Wow.
So I said, my friend, we didn't come to fetch anything. We brought a medical team to help. And let me give you some news, I told him. I said, do you know the military of Pakistan just handed over a hospital to Gift of the Givers. We're the only team in the whole world that was granted a hospital that the government trusted us. A hospital that was closing down. We converted in 24 hours to a 400-bed emergency hospital. Theaters, x-ray machine, medical teams, beds, detergents, linen, brought in nursing teams from all over and put the doctors to work doing 75 operations a day. We made history in that hospital to the point that in 2006, the Pakistan president gave us an award as the only organization on the African continent that deserves recognition from Pakistan for the thousands of lives that we saved. We went in with the most advanced medical team in the world.
Oh,
neurosurgeons, general surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, anesthetists, physiotherapists, spinal rehab specialists, and for 5 months we supported it. To the point that when the teams left, everybody in Pakistan cried for us. Mm-hmm. And we are from Africa. Nowhere else. We were African and we did it.
Proudly African.
On the same way, when I mentioned Haiti, when we went across to Haiti, believe in yourselves, telling the Africans, believe in yourselves. When we went to Haiti, the European, the American and the French teams came and they said, we cannot work here. Everything, there's no theater, there's no functional equipment. How can anybody work here? So we said, what do you expect? It's an earthquake.
Mm.
Everything's destroyed. And Haiti was one of the poor countries in the world. So what do you expect in terms of technology standards? The South African team went forward. They said, leave this to us. We do it with gut feel. And they got to work immediately. When there was no drill, they took a Black & Decker drill and they started operating. When the screws were too long, they hacksawed it and used it inside. When there was no material and slings for weight for orthopedics, they took material from the houses, cut it and put it. When there was no proper orthopedic weights, they took rocks from the ground and said, this is half kg, this is 1 kg. And they start adapting and make do to make things work. To the credit of the American and French and European teams, they said to the people of Haiti, if you want help, if you want to survive, if you want to live, then go to the dream team. And the dream team is from South Africa.
Wow. So then, if this is the mentality out there, that Africa is irrelevant, and Africans, whenever they go somewhere, they are going to take things for free. What measures, what advice can you give to the rest of Africa today?
Prove it to us. We have our own dignity. An old lady, pensioner, will look after 10 people in one family. She won't beg, she'll sacrifice, and she'll look after 10 children. And it's been done throughout Africa. Learn from the values of the old people, where that spirit of nurturing, of teaching spirituality, of moral values, our youth need to remember that.
Mm.
They need to remember where we came from, where our parents came from. And we have to have respect and dignity, and most important of all, as a continent, we have faith in the Almighty. If you have that kind of faith, doesn't matter what religion you belong to, as you have faith in Almighty, He will show you the way, and He will open the door for you. You've got to believe that. And we need to do everything possible to study, to tell the land, to help each other, not to waste, not to be caught up with the consumer life of other nations, not to waste money on irrelevant games and cards and all those kind of things. Focus on buying and implement, and let's start working with each other. If we can help Africa, yes, we want to take this idea to every continent. Maybe later on we will take medical teams from other countries to join us. Mm. Take media from other countries to join us, and let's work as one united Africa, yes, to develop each other.
Mm. All right, you're also contributing to the employment industry, I understand. You've got a whole lot of people working under Gift of the Givers Foundation.
When we started off in 1992, we had only one staff, right up till 2003, only one staff. Mm. And then the government gave us a food parcel program to roll out in South Africa. I designed the program for government. And they came to me and said, look, we want you to roll it out. And they gave me 60 million rand to roll out the food parcel program. And it's then when I needed to put in more managers, more warehouse staff, more laborers. And I didn't have the heart to put them off after this project was over. Oh. And as time went on, we started expanding. And now from one, we have 50 full-time staff for 24 different projects. But in addition to that, because of the bursaries and scholarships, so many people have got jobs. They are managers, they are doctors, they are dentists. They've created employment for so many other people because we funded them. Mm. And then because of our agricultural supporting of seeds and fertilizer, people now got their own farms. They're growing their own crops, their own vegetables, which they're selling, and they're becoming self-sufficient. We've given out sewing machines. We've given up different types of equipment to different people. But we've come up with something very novel, something very new. And we found all the people don't understand technology too much. So we came up with a program called Jumpstart. Jumpstart, an entrepreneurial program, where we take children in, I don't know what they call it in other parts of Africa. We used to call it Standard 8, now we call it Grade 10. Mm. Maybe other countries call it different names. Yes. But Grade 10 or Standard 8. We went to them, we said, come with a business idea. And we went to different schools, and we selected 148 kids for the program. And they came with different ideas. An African child designed a solar battery. He came with a formula, and in front of us, it worked. And he showed, he said, in the townships, domestic people need a cheap solar battery. Here's the model. And he came with it, and he's installed 8.
And yet some people still think Africa is irrelevant.
Yes. And so we came with a program, and we said, if you come with a business plan, we will give you a website, a 5-page website, access to email, to Facebook, to Twitter. We'll give you a marketing magazine once a month, all on email. We'll teach you know-how. We'll give you business support. And we'll host you for 1 year. We'll give you your own logo, your own letterhead, your own invoice. And like this, you can start business, and we'll give you a business support idea. And we've got a whole business unit supporting it. And these 148 kids came with ideas. Already in December, one of those group, 2 kids alone, made 15,000 rand profit from their idea. So we are now looking at expanding this idea beyond school. We invested 2 million last year. We're investing another 3 million this year with this program to help it expand, to make kids become entrepreneurs. And look at the beauty of this program. Normally, the child doesn't want to listen to what the mother or the father says. He's too busy with his computer or his games. Mm. Now, if he has a mother, say, doing bead making or doing some kind of painting at home, and says, my son, how can I get this message to other people about my bead baking or my cake baking or in my dresses? How do I get it? Now the son has his computer program. He loves computers. He takes the mother's bead making address, he puts it on computer and makes it accessible to the whole world.
Wow.
So mother and child now work together. You bring family harmony, you bring unity, you bring discipline in the home, you bring spirituality, and you bring business and faith in Almighty. What could be a better program than that?
This has been a pleasant church, but any last words to Africa today?
Africa, again I emphasize, they have to believe in ourselves. We need to study, we need to make progress, we need to go back to agriculture. We need to learn to trade with each other on the African continent. We need to be supportive, to have the spirit of Ubuntu, to show love and kindness to each other. We need to embrace ourselves across the different clans and the different tribes and the different religions. The moment we do that and work together as one continent, as one nation, we will transform this nation in a very short space of time. But I give assurance that Africa's time has come, where we will see prosperity among our people, and it's not too far away.
Wow. Thank you so much, and it's been a pleasant chat. But in case some people would want to be part of this Jumpstart, or some people would want to send in their donations, how can they do so?
It's the best, because in Africa, the best thing would be to visit our website, www.giftofthegivers.org, as one word, or send us an email on info at giftofthegivers.org. All one word. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You. Thank you so much, Dr. Suleiman.
It's a pleasure.
There you go, Africa. I've been speaking to the founder of the Gift of the Givers Foundation here in Pietermaritzburg, South Africa. Send in those emails to clickafrica@brainmesa.com. You'll be seeing more of the Gift of the Givers Foundation projects here on Click Africa, because when you click into Africa, this is what you see. I'm Josie Mahachi, signing out. Martin Luther King. Egypt!